Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So you may have read in the tabloids over the weekend that NYU is in the process of kicking out Chinese human rights activist Chen Guangchun after his and his family after hosting them for the past year. And according to Chen, they're doing so under pressure from Chinese officials. But NYU says that isn't the case. So I'm joined now by Jerome Cohen. He's professor of law at NYU and an expert in Chinese law. And as you may remember, he also helped arrange Chen's fellowship and has served as his mentor during his time here. They were on the program together when Chen was here as a guest. Professor Cohen is in Wuhan, China today and joins us by phone from there. Professor Cohen, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome back.
Well, I'm delighted, Brian. Thank you.
So the way this is being reported makes it sound like the university is throwing Chen and his family out on the street. What's your version of what's going on here?
Nonsense.
What's happening?
That's just nonsense. If I give you a fellowship for a year and I spend several hundred thousand dollars on you and you're told it's only for a year and you're given 7 or 8 months notice for sure that it's only a year, am I throwing you out on the street? Come on, it's just silly.
How did it get out like that?
How do I what?
Well, this is what he says. So how would he have misunderstood it so much?
Well, I don't know. He's in the hands of people who have helped him twist things in a way that's sad and unfortunate. This charge that NYU is ending his fellowship as scheduled because of pressure from the Chinese government, there's just no facts to support it. It's so easy to make an accusation, a suspicion, but where are the facts? Why don't they come forth and give us some instances? I've worked at NYU for 23 years. I've consistently criticized in public, in writing, and on your show and others, the Chinese government's misconduct concerning human rights. And no one at NYU has ever suggested, even after they started negotiating for a Shanghai campus, that I should moderate what I say. And when the State Department needed our help in order to help Mr. Chen get out of China, our President John Sexton never hesitated. And when the original deal broke down, I never hesitated, despite the Shanghai campus. And since he's been with us, no one has ever said to me, an NYU official, a Chinese official, anybody, that we somehow should not help Mr. Chen. It's just not been an issue. So I don't know where all this is coming from, but I regret that it's happened. It's too bad. But it's an important lesson for everybody, especially those who are old enough like me to remember so-called tail gunner Joe McCarthy, who used to make wild charges. I have in my hand the names of, and we never heard any real evidence. And we learned a lesson. You can't accuse people without facts. Especially, you shouldn't do that if these people have been bailing you out and supporting you in handsome style for a year.
Law school usually lasts 3 years. We heard that Chen is here to study law. Is he here to get an actual U.S. law degree?
No, it's not possible, Brian, because his English is still very limited. We had tried to arrange for Mr. Chen to study law in China. They'd never had a blind man study law in China, but I had arranged that with a Shanghai law school. But before it could be implemented, he got locked up by the local police, and he's never really had a chance to study law in China. And we have given him two or three times a week when he's been available to learn something about American law, and he's learned quite a lot. He has an amazing memory. He's very smart, very retentive, and very interested. And we've had a succession of judges and prosecutors and law professors meet with him. But that's informal. It's got nothing to do with getting an American law degree or qualifying for the bar.
And according to the reports, he says he's been forced to study too much and hasn't had enough time for activism.
You know, he spent every morning working on his memoirs, which is very important as a historical and political legal document, and also as a vehicle for earning quite a lot of money. And afternoons, he's been spending two afternoons a week on average learning about law, and three afternoons with his very intelligent wife learning English. And he's also gone to endless numbers of speeches all over the Western world. He's just been in Berlin and Oslo and London and Brussels. You know, he's the toast of the Western world, and that takes time away from study. But this isn't because of financial reasons. He doesn't have to worry at this point. He's confronting two very good offers. But he's doing it because it's important for the world to get his message. Mm-hmm. And he's a very effective speaker.
By the way, we learned a few weeks ago, as you know, that in China, Chen's mother and brother had both just been issued Chinese passports, which they had previously been denied. And this was widely interpreted as a concession by the Chinese government to help set the tone for the summit between Presidents Obama and Xi that just took place, allowing this dissident's family to come and join him in New York. Do you think Obama or the prospect of relations with the U.S. played a role here? And do you think those visas might be jeopardized because of the new flurry of publicity over this?
No, I'll tell you, we're trying to interpret the signals. The tea leaves are inscrutable. The leadership in China allowed the local authorities to persecute and abuse his family and send his nephew to prison for 3 years and 3 months. And this has turned Chen, understandably, into a dissident. When he came to the United States in May of 2012, he still had an open mind, and the Chinese government, if they had stopped persecuting his family, could have made him into perhaps a more moderate speaker about Chinese affairs. But instead, they increased the pressure on his family, hoping to silence not somebody who's readily silenceable. And what we found suddenly before the Obama meeting was applications for passports from his oldest brother and his mother were suddenly granted. And we don't know whether that was because they expected President Obama to present this case to Mr. Xi, and this helps improve the atmosphere, or we don't know whether it's related to his forthcoming trip to Taiwan, which Beijing is very worried about. So it's not clear what it's all about, but it's a good sign. But we're looking for really substantial signs from Beijing, such as releasing his nephew from prison. He's been unfairly condemned there as an act of vengeance against Chen. That would be a meaningful signal, not just granting passports.
Could I ask you, since NYU is setting up the Shanghai campus, why does New York University want to be in Shanghai? What's the mission? And how difficult is it for universities to expand into China's huge market while sticking to American values of intellectual freedom and open inquiry?
Well, that's a wonderful question. It's a great challenge. I was with President Sexton. We went to China together on his first trip when I joined NYU and 1990. We went in 1991, and we went for four more years after that. And he became genuinely excited about the promise of educational cooperation with China. You've got 1.3 billion people, many of whom are very eager to learn. They want higher standards of education. And NYU was invited to set up a campus, a real campus, in Shanghai. Shanghai is an obvious place to do it, and the Shanghai government has gone out of its way to be helpful. But there are obvious risks involved. And one can stay home and sit on one's hands and reject an offer to cooperate, or one can try to make it work. And I wasn't party to this decision, maybe because the administration thought I'd be too skeptical about the chances of success. But I admire what they've done, and it's an enormous investment, and it's something of a gamble, especially at a time as now in China, when things are very tight for the media and very tight for education. Yet I think they're going to make it work, but any number of incidents could occur that could be a challenge to continuing cooperation. So,
are there any standards being put down in writing or anything like that, that if they were violated, NYU would close up shop, kind of like Google did after they tried to navigate business and free speech interests in China?
Yeah, as I said, I have not been party to the negotiations, but when I've inquired, I've been told that this has been worked out very carefully with mutual understanding, and we'll have to see. The proof will be in the pudding.
Before you go, since you're in China, I'm just curious if you're hearing anything from people there about Edward Snowden and whether he's buttering up China with this information that he released about U.S. spying on them to get favorable treatment in court, like on the possibility of extradition or asylum. What's your best buzz on Snowden?
You know, there's a whole range of problems as we contemplate China. China has, I think, misguidedly excluded certain great American specialists on China, such as Professor Andrew Nathan of Columbia, Professor Perry Link, who used to be at Princeton. He's now at the University of California at Irvine. That is a mistake. China has admitted many of us who continue to be critical, and I think for good reason, because they know we're being helpful. It's a strange situation. On the one hand, the Chinese government doesn't like to get public criticism, even though they may recognize occasionally it's deserved. On the other hand, they want very much cooperation from people. I just spent several days here in a city of 10 million in the heartland of China, and we spent 2 days training over 300 prosecutors who've come from all over the country to learn about the privilege against self-incrimination, the right to counsel, and other essentials of American due process of law that we ourselves sometimes depart from. And we've brought American experts on law and experts from Taiwan and from the United Kingdom to join us. This is a thrilling spectacle to see this happening, because events like this over the years are making an impact. And today I met with one of the great universities of China to talk with their international law professors about the problems of the East China Sea and the South China Sea. And they are eager to exchange ideas and cooperate. So on the one hand, even in parlous times in China, good things like this are happening. On the other hand, we have to recognize that they're still suppressing people's rights, and anything could go wrong on any of these projects. So this is reality that we confront. And I think my experience of almost 50 years working with China, or visiting here at least in the initial period, suggests this is a task worth doing.
Professor Jerome Cohen, China expert from NYU. He joined us from Wuhan, China. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, new media watcher Ethan Zuckerman on snatching cyber utopianism from the jaws of defeat. Stay with us.